Jeffrey Bennett, of course, is the digital producer for News and Notes, and he joined me here in the studios of NPR West. Now, though, on to our bloggers' roundtable. Reverend Joseph Lowery apologizes for his inaugural benediction, and has lip-syncing become a national pastime? With us, media consultant Carmen Dixon. She writes the blog All About Race and also blogs for AOL Black Voices. Rob Redding, who maintains the blog Redding News Review, and Wayne Bennett, an attorney who blogs as The Field Negro. Welcome, everybody.
Hi, Tony.
Hi, Tony.
Nice to have you back. So we just heard about the reaction to Jennifer Hudson's Super Bowl lip sync from the blogosphere. Carmen, what did you think?
Well, I thought her performance was wonderful. And the thing is, it's a production. It's a live event. And you want the national anthem in particular to come across as strongly and as beautifully as possible. So to take out the random possibilities of live production, they pre-tape it. I don't have a problem with that as long as she's singing.
Well, you know, what was interesting to me, Wayne, I was watching it, right? And I'm like, this woman is tearing this song up. So why are the cameras not on her? Why am I seeing the football players? Mm-hmm. I want to see her because this is her first public appearance. And it didn't dawn on me that she was lip syncing. And that's why they didn't put the cameras on her, so as not to embarrass her, for us to not see her lips moving when they were supposed to. You know what I mean, Wayne?
Yeah, I do. I do. And I have to be honest, I actually thought she was singing live. I mean, she is a great singer. So I don't even know. As Carmen said, though, it is a production. And I'm sure the producers wanted it to be piped in or whatever the case may be. So I have to admit, I was surprised. Now, I do know at football games, though, they like to get camera shots of the players to see their reaction. But you're absolutely right. There was not a lot of camera on her during the performance.
That's true. So here's my question for you, Rob Redding. If you want to do lip syncing to make sure that the performance is right, then why wasn't Bruce Springsteen lip synced?
Bruce, that's a good question.
You know, I mean, that was live, so still Super Bowl. You know, what about that?
Well, you know, she's had a hard time of it, and you would think a girl like Jennifer Hudson would want the spotlight. Unfortunately, she decided that she wanted to tape it and replay it back for us. I was shocked to learn that it was not live, and I was even more shocked when people were now asking which one is better, Whitney.
Let me stop you right there.
Let me stop. It's a no-brainer.
Let me stop you right there. We're going to try to clean up your line a little bit, and I'll ask the folks on the other side of the glass to do that, and we'll bring you right back. So because we want you to be heard clearly, Carmen.
I wanted to jump in. I read an article about why they lip-synced her and Faith Hill, which is sometimes getting lost in the conversation.
That's true, Faith Hill.
It's because they wanted those two songs to be clear and inspirational. It's a whole, you can't lip sync Bruce. Are you kidding me? It's impossible. You can't, you couldn't have lip synced Prince. This is impossible. And it's a whole different energy that they're going for, and random sound problems don't matter. But when you're setting up and singing the national anthem and God Bless America, this, you know, millions and millions of people around the world feeling all patriotic toward the U.S., you want it perfect. So,
well, I suppose that's true. My only issue about it, maybe issue isn't even the wrong word, the only thing that made me have some questions is, in order to pull that off, you have to have coordination between the director, the technical director, the camera people, and it's such a coordinated performance. I feel like people are pushing me someplace that maybe I'll go on my own. I don't need the help electronically to make me feel patriotic.
It's TV.
Happy. Well, I know about that. Actually, I do. In fact, that's a wonderful transition to our next topic, television. Television stations are soon going to stop broadcasting their analog signals, although it gets confusing whether it's going to happen next week or not, depending on what Congress decides to do. You know, the House has already blocked it on one occasion. They're still talking about it. But in the interim, while we wait for the leaders of the free world to decide whether we should have rabbit ears or not. What about you now? Do you have rabbit ears at home, Wayne, or are you strictly satellite and cable now?
I have no idea. I have a cable subscriber that's hooked up. My wife does all the electronic stuff in my home. I don't even know. I just want to control the remote. And as long as that bad boy comes on and those channels change, I get ESPN and whatever I want to get, I'm good.
So, Rob, you back with us?
Yes, I am.
So do you have any, some of you must have a little portable TV in the garage, in the bathroom, someplace,
kitchen
that's not connected to cable. Because if you want cable or satellite, you've got to put a box every place that TV is, and you know what that costs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm so not ready for this. I forget that it's actually happening until I haven't watched television since August, so not on a consistent basis. Just about everything I do is on the internet, and I watch it on playback on YouTube or something like that. So maybe I'll be YouTubing the rest of my life.
You know, something else that's a part of this, Carmen, is when this happens and when those TVs become useless, you know, what are folks, particularly black folks, going to do with those sets? You know, some communities are known for putting, you know, couches on the lawn. So I would imagine that TVs are going to be all up and down the sidewalk in parts of America.
Well, it's even worse than that. When I moved, I had a digital ready color TV, but a big one, not a flat screen. I saved up and finally bought a nice flat screen. But we moved, and so we wanted to give it away. We called four organizations. They wouldn't take the TV.
Yeah.
They wouldn't take the TV. So it is a very good, they didn't even want it. They're like, oh, it's one of those big ones. We don't want it. This is a color Sony TV, and no one was interested. So who knows what's going to happen to those TVs?
Well, I will tell you this from my own experience out here in California. When you want to get rid of a TV or a computer, you have to take it to a specific location. It's not a dump. Well, it's kind of an electronics dump yard, you might say.
But how sad is that?
And you can only do it on certain days of the week, and you have to pull in there, and they take it out of you can't even take it out of your own car. They have to lift it out of the car. These guys are wearing hazmat-looking clothes, you know, and they take the TVs. When this transition happens, it's going to be long lines at some of these places around the country.
What's interesting about those televisions and people in the black community having the transition, there are some transition issues because they actually talk about the black community being least ready to do this. So we've covered that in our media section as well.
Yeah, but Tony, you know that a lot of these black folks and these homes, that's going to be a part of the furniture for life.
Yeah.
They're not going anywhere. You have grandparents.
Hey, that's right. Yeah. Right. Put a plan on top of it, or put a picture put an Obama picture on top of the TV.
That's King.
And just leave it there. Yeah, exactly. All right, let's move on talking about Obama. As a matter of fact, the longtime civil rights leader, the Reverend Joseph Lowery, landed in some hot water for his benediction at the inauguration. We all saw it. Here is the closing prayer.
We ask you to help us right for that day when black will not be asked to get back, when brown can stick around, when yellow will be mellow, when the red man can get ahead, man, and when white will embrace what is right. Let all those who do justice and love mercy say amen.
Well, that went over funny with some people, not so funny with others. The Reverend ended up apologizing, Wayne. Rush Limbaugh was one of those who said that he had insulted this country. That was a cultural clash, wasn't it?
It was, because I've actually heard that before numerous times. And I think what got a lot of people in the majority population is the very end when he said, when white will do right. So from what I've been hearing among people in conservatives and people in the majority population, it's like all the other races, you know, you're hoping they'll get ahead, but we're the ones that got to do right. So I guess it didn't fit into that post-racial American message. It kind of separated the white man from the yellow man and the red man and the brown one.
Well, it certainly did, Carmen. I was struck by that.
But I have to tell you, when I watched it, I was uncomfortable with it right away. Yeah. Right away. I was sitting there watching it with my mom in D.C., and I was like, because I thought, given what America had just done as a whole and voted in Barack Obama, I didn't think that was exactly the time to be having that conversation.
Yeah,
it hit a sour note. I enjoyed it, but I had a sour, and in fact, I was going to post about it and just haven't gotten around to it. So I was actually happy he acknowledged that some people might have felt pained or excluded by that mention.
And that was a mistake, and that it was not an acknowledgement that's some people would believe that we are in a brand new day. Well, we are in a brand new day with a black president. You agree with that, Rob?
We are in a brand new day, but we're still dealing with the same old people. And I think that his comments were very interesting, and I think that they were appropriate. You know, I think we need to come back to reality and understand not all of America embraces Barack Obama as being president of the United States. And we do have a different constituency of folks that are bringing in a new kind of thought into office. You're seeing the church for the first time acting out what happens typically in church, a black church, in a public forum. And so that's the reason why some whites feel uncomfortable. But I think most whites get it. I think we get that there's progress here, and that's what much of the prayer was about. That little part there, I didn't have a problem with it.
Now, this is perhaps an extreme analogy, but in a very mild way, the kinds of things that got Reverend Wright,
absolutely,
Jeremiah Wright, and such hot water. His was much more menacing sounding and vehement. But the point was
same
really the
strain.
Same, wasn't it?
It's the same strain. Mm-hmm. It's the same, because I understood what Lowry meant, and I understand what a hero he is, mm-hmm, and I understand he has this huge heart for all humanity. But I just felt that note was sour, and I knew automatically how many people in this celebration, yeah, would suddenly feel let down a little. And I just said, right, oh, let's not have anyone feel let down today.
Yeah.
Tomorrow's fine.
Well, it took a little while, apparently, for them to realize that and for the apology to come.
I think, well, people were talking to me about it that day.
Well, I'm talking about for Lowry.
For Lowry, yes.
Exactly.
For
Lowry's
but the reaction was right away.
Was absolutely,
yeah,
right.
Because it was a great catch for the African-American newspaper. I believe it was the Tulsa World or one of those newspapers that actually picked up on it and actually followed through with the interview, which is where it was carried, because this did not get a lot of publicity throughout the mainstream press, I might add.
You're absolutely
right. The apology.
Right. Well, we had a good conversation today. I can't wait till we get together again and do this. Mm-hmm. Thank you all. We have been talking with Rob Redding, who maintains the blog Redding News Review, attorney Wayne Bennett, who blogs as The Field Negro. He was at the Audio Post studios in Philadelphia, and media consultant Carmen Dixon, who writes the blog All About Race. She also blogs for AOL Black Voices. She was with me here at our NPR West studios in California. And by the way, you can find links to their blogs and to ours at nprnewsandnotes.org.